Welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are once again heading to France, this time looking at the film Pickpocket by director Robert Bresson. Returning on the show today to talk about Pickpocket is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So it's interesting. This is a very tight, compact film. It felt very tight, compact. I mean, I was surprised that it's, you know, only 75 minutes long.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a short film for a full-length feature. Very economical.
Yeah, and it doesn't, like, you know, really, like, I guess, grow on about, like, character development or anything like that. It just tells you the story, and it gets you through it, I guess.
Yes, Bresson is definitely a minimalist in the way he approaches film. He trained as a painter first.
Oh, really?
And then he decided that he had come to the end of what painting could do, actually that Cézanne had, and that film was the next medium to try to do something with.
Yeah, and the first two films we talked about, with the French films, were very new. You know, one was Breathless, that's the icon of the French New Wave, and then one was Bob Le Fembu, which is considered a predecessor to it. And this one feels like if there was like an anti-French New Wave, I feel like this film would be it. It's not show-offy. It doesn't call the attention to the fact that it's a film. It doesn't do anything like jarring like a jump cut. It just tells you the story.
It does. It is interesting, though, that it was actually shot at the same time as Breathless on the streets of Paris. So two different directors doing two different kinds of films, both about gangsters, with different approaches. And you're right, it isn't very New Wave at all.
Mm-hmm. It's not stylistic, but it was interesting. You're talking about Godard. One of the things I read up, one of the people that praised Bresson was Godard. He said, Godard is to French cinema what Dostoevsky is to Russian novelists and what Mozart is to music.
That's interesting, and that's a very good way of putting it. Godard might have admired him, but apparently Melville loathed him.
Oh, wow.
Yes, apparently they didn't get along at all. Yeah, but Bresson's style is not like the New Wave at all. It's more like Impressionism or Minimalism, really, because he just takes his actors, who he calls models, and he doesn't want them to emote. He just wants them to be very blank. So they have these flat, expressionless performances, and it's very difficult and it's very personal way to make a film. But the film's never achieved any kind of great popularity because people didn't really know how to approach the film. It didn't look like the New Wave, which was new and exciting, and it wasn't like old-style Hollywood filmmaking either.
Yeah, that's definitely the one thing that was kind of interesting about the film when I was looking it up. The lead role played by Martin LaSalle, it was known that he wasn't a professional actor. And I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense just because, it wasn't a lot of emotion in that film. And even in the one scene where he gets a little bit upset and throws something on the ground, his face still has that blank, expressionless expression.
Yes, and I think it's always kind of interesting to use non-professional actors because in a way you get a more natural performance of people acting the way people do. But when you have to actually do something like show anger and it's not something you're doing naturally because you're supposed to be acting, that's when you really need a professional.
Yeah, because I know that's maybe the one drawback I had in this film. I did feel like they could have had a little bit more emotion. It was just a little bit too deadpan. I mean, you're talking about unprofessional actors, and one film that I always felt that did that well was The Bicycle Thief. I mean, I feel that the main character in that movie really showed emotion, even though he wasn't a professional actor.
Yes, and that's a really good point. You can have very natural acting from people who aren't professionals, but not in this case. I don't think he did a very good job, LaSalle, in this movie. He's all right until he has to actually act, and then
yeah, just as far as showing that emotion, I mean, it's like you're really angry and you're going no, but you still have that blank stare.
But Bresson he doesn't really approach actors the way most directors try to direct people. You know, he focuses more on faces and hands and doors.
Mm-hmm. And you definitely see that a lot in this movie. And you know, interesting, you said Melville and him didn't like each other, but I felt the way they were similar was with the way they kind of took this by the numbers. I'm going to show you how they operate and everything approach to pickpocketing. They were showing how they operate, how they practice, you know, how they keep their fingers, you know,
limber,
and even just how they operate. Like, it isn't just one guy, you know, goes into somebody's purse, steals some money. If they steal it, they have like go-tos to, you know, make sure it gets mixed up a little bit so it isn't just them directly. So it was really interesting how they just, once again, just show you by the numbers how they how people approach pickpocketing, how they do it.
You know, this movie was banned in Finland until about 1965 because it was such a good how-to movie of how to pick pockets.
And just once again, just remember there's like somebody in the audience going, oh, okay.
All right, yeah, taking notes. Yeah.
And, you know, and not only from going with the lack of emotion, it's not just the main character, Martin LaSalle. I feel it's almost everybody, even the love interest. She doesn't even show a lot of emotion, or even his friend. In other instances where somebody would show like anger or happiness or relief or whatever, they still just kind of, they all have that just this blank stare and emotion.
You know, that's part of Brisson's minimalist style, because he doesn't give you any backstory either. Mm-hmm. It's a surprise at the end that you even find out that Michel is even interested in the girl. He seems so impassive and so blank. It just seems to kind of come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and, you know, it is interesting, but I do see at the end, do you see that the character of Michel has a redemption at the end when he finally admits that he loves her? Do you think that, you know, he's finally seeing the error of his ways and he's going to, you know, once he gets out of prison, he's going to be a better man? Or you still think he's going to have that urge to pick pockets again?
Well, Brisson's films often have little or nothing to do with the French New Wave, but they always have a lot to do with his Catholic background. They're rarely stories about temptation or struggles with doubt or for reasons to believe. They're more about subliminal resistance to or discovery of grace. So that ending scene was meant to sort of take us to that place, but not in the way that we would have normally seen that coming.
So we say it's kind of like a born-again thing? Or
I wouldn't say born-again. It's like a moment of grace, not necessarily a state of grace.
Okay.
I mean, I think in that moment, because there's so many scenes with doors and rooms, that when he's finally imprisoned in the room, he actually has that moment of grace because he has a moment of self-awareness. Whether he has a real change of heart and is a different man, that's, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Something to debate, I suppose.
And, you know, it was interesting. I was talking a little bit about Dostoevsky earlier. I read that this story was very similar to what happens in Crime and Punishment. Now, I'll admit, I've never read that book, so I was wondering, have you read it?
I have read it back in college. It is very similar. The hero Raskolnikov in the Russian novel also thinks that he is of a higher order and, you know, therefore is entitled to commit crimes. They also both have lonely and isolated characters. And there's even the hole behind Michelle's bed that he uses to hide the stolen goods is like Dostoevsky's hero. He does the same thing. So it's definitely lifted from the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has that sort of depressing Russian novel feel to it, you know. And part of that goes to the somber expressions on the guy's face. And, you know, he looks like he walked right out of a Russian novel.
Russians are always depressing in those, like just like Dr. Zhivago. But anyway, you know, you're talking about, you know, how he thinks he's above the law. In one film that had come to mind when he had that philosophy was the two characters in Rope. Now, he's obviously a bit less dangerous. He just wants to pick your pockets. He doesn't want to kill you. But they do have that, you know, that idea that, you know, some people should be above the law and do what they want if they're intelligent enough.
Yeah, why do they always commit crimes, though? That's the interesting question. Well, Brisson, though, never lets the main character show fear or anxiety like Hitchcock, who loved to do that. Instead, he depends on images and sounds, you know, to express that fear. Sound of footsteps, images of shaking hands, cold faces, door handles turning quietly. So he builds that up. He's even been quoted as saying he thinks image and sound should be separate. They shouldn't go together. You shouldn't have two senses working at once. You should do them one at a time.
Huh.
It kind of gives, I think, his films a little bit of a jarring sense in that way, because you're expecting more.
Yeah, he's definitely expecting more with this film, a bit more of the suspense, because, you know, the whole thing is he's wondering when he's going to get caught. And it just it sort of happens at the end, and it's not even like the, it just, you know, abruptly happens. He goes to the racetrack again, and then, oh, the guy he was with was this plainclothes police officer.
Which is also something from Dostoevsky. There's a policeman who has these philosophical conversations with the hero. Kind of knows, you know, something's up, and so they play cat and mouse throughout the book, just the way they do in the movie.
Yeah, and then, you know, once again, getting back to our topic, but going back to Rope, the character of the police chief that he's sort of having this toying philosophy with, it almost feels, once again, a little bit like the character of James Stewart in Rope.
You know, my favorite scene from Rope is when John Dahl goes to put the rope away in the kitchen, and there's that swinging door. So mm-hmm. you see him go in there, yes. the door swings, you see him drop the rope, and the door swings shut. It's beautifully, beautifully shot. And Brisson does a lot with doors, you know, the way he opens them and closes them, how he finds them, how he leaves them, because the film is about Michel's movement being arrested finally. But I love the fact that the movie about the pickpocket, the guy doesn't even close, much less lock, his own door.
Yeah, see, you know, everybody opens his door, and like half the time, he even leaves it open.
Yes, so he just leaves and just leaves it open. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah, and then another thing I always notice is, you know, if he's that like careless, but then how did when the police search his apartment, how do they not catch the money, find the money or the loot?
Well, because he hid it behind the, because they hadn't read Dostoevsky.
Oh, okay.
They didn't know it was going to be behind the bed in the hole mm-hmm. in the wall.
So I was curious, besides the character of Michel, and you talked a little bit about the police chief, what other characters in the film that you felt really stood out to you? Was it like the character of Jacques, his friend, or more of the love interest?
Actually, there is one of his fellow pickpockets. It's a guy named Kasagi. And in real life, he was a well-known conjurer, a magician. So oh, you see this wonderful scene of one guy lifts the wallet, he passes it off to somebody else, which is actually how it's done, by the way, from what I understand. But in the end, Kasagi actually puts the lightened wallet back in the guy's suit pocket. You know, they take the money out of it, but they return the wallet. Now, that's not what you would do if you were a pickpocket. You're not anticipating an audience. You don't mm-hmm. want an audience, but a magician would. Uh-huh. And the magician would want you to see. You know, and then, you know, I was so sly, I slipped the wallet back. That was a nice touch, and I'm glad Brisson left that in there, because I'm sure that was Kasagi's idea.
Now, was that the scene when he catches the guy who's trying to get in the taxi?
This is the one where they're on the train, and they're passing.
When he's going through.
Yeah. In the very end, there's this very nice, finishing the sentence with a curlicue, where they put the one of the wallets back.
Yeah, a
little sleight of hand.
Yeah, I was wondering when that guy's going through, it's like, how are you not noticing that people are reaching in your pockets and taking your wallet?
You know, speaking of Hitchcock again, some of the scenes where the hands were doing what they were doing seemed like, no, hands don't really bend that way. There's a scene in Strangers on a Train where Robert Walker is reaching for the lighter that has fallen down the sewer grate. Mm-hmm. And his hand, you know, stretches and stretches. And it's just like super hand. It's like mm-hmm. super rubber hand. It's almost like it reminded me of that with this, because you see hands bending and twisting and, you know, not tipping the person being robbed at all, that they're even being touched,
mm-hmm.
much less having things taken from them.
Yeah, that was a good camera work. And interesting, the cinematography in this film, hope I pronounced this right, was Léonce Henri Brel. And I was reading, he goes way back to the silent era. Like, one of the things he worked on earlier was that Napoleon epic that was on in 1927. So, man, he goes way back into the day.
Well, he does a nice thing. He does nice things, speaking of the hands, of doing a lot of close-ups of the hands, showing mm-hmm. you how that's working, which is kind of silent. It could almost be a silent film moment, that whole mm-hmm. scene on the train where they're
definitely
passing
does.
The wallets around.
It was interesting. I was watching this, and we were talking about American crime films like Rope and Strangers on a Train. Do you feel that this film somewhat qualifies as a film noir?
I do. It doesn't have a femme fatale, but it's definitely dark. It's definitely about the underworld,
mm-hmm.
and the main character kind of comes to a bad end in the end. He ends up behind bars.
Mm. And he does have that one tragic flaw is that he just can't stop.
It is a really good study of compulsion, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like Bob Le Flambeur. He can't stop gambling. This guy can't stop ripping people off.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, we talk about noir, but one thing I felt that goes against a noir is the music in the film. It's baroque. It's classical music. And you don't really hear that in like a movie about like a criminal in the streets. And it was just really, it goes against, like, you know, when you even with something like Breathless, you have, like, the jazz score, the cool jazz score and everything. It feels very urban and, you know, in the city. But this one, it's classical music, and it feels very jarring.
It does. It feels like it doesn't belong, because that also feels like something sort of elegant
mm-hmm.
From a different world, not the underworld.
So, and I was wondering, how was the reception of this film in France when it first came out? I know you talked about it was banned in Finland, did it?
Finland, yeah.
Yeah, because it was almost felt like a how-to at picking pockets, did it get a lot, was that controversial at the time?
You know, it wouldn't have been able, it would have had a problem here in the States because of the production code. You know, you don't want to be able to show people how to commit crimes or insinuate that maybe crime does pay. But the Bresson himself was never really popular because he worked very slowly. He didn't make more than a film every 5 years. So any notoriety that he gained didn't really have a lot of momentum. In the 80s, he retired after trying to raise money for a adaptation of the Book of Genesis. Talk about taking a completely different tack on things.
Well, for a little small compact film, the movie that's probably going to be like a giant epic.
Right, right. How do you condense Genesis?
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was interesting, some of the influence of the film, in the DVD copy you borrowed, lended to me, there's an introduction by Paul Schrader. And Paul Schrader was reading, says it's probably his favorite film. He feels it's a film that's flawless. And, you know, thinking of that, and obviously his most famous film was when he wrote Taxi Driver, there's a little bit of similarities, I feel, to the character of Michelle and then Travis Bickle.
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, it's got the confessional narration and that voyeuristic look at society and a loner who sort of lives outside society's norms. But also Schrader likes what he calls like the two-character movie, which is the actor and a room. Mm-hmm. And this movie definitely qualifies for that, because, you know, you see a lot of his room and you see a lot of what's supposed to be, you're wondering what's going on in his head, you know, all these close-ups of the actor. It's very much driven by the one guy. Bresson spent 18 months in a German prison camp during the Second World War. So prison features in some of his early films, but it also kind of fits in this one because, you know, the main character, Michel, is sort of imprisoned by his own compulsion. And also, you know, they show him in these individual rooms with doors that open or doors that are shutting. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, he ends up in prison. That has to come from Bresson's own life, I think. Just like he almost couldn't not put it in his movies. But in terms of influence on subsequent films besides Taxi Driver, Schrader also did a movie called American Gigolo, which takes the ending from Pickpocket almost verbatim.
Interesting. And so here's something about the career of Robert Bresson, because one thing I noticed that he didn't start directing movies until his 40s. And so tell us a little bit about, just give us an overall overview of his films and I mean, just his career. And how, what, you know, he talked about he was an impressionist painter and did the, he said he was in prison in World War II.
In World War II. And then he, prison featured in his movies Les Anges du Péché, Un condamné à mort des échappés. And the Trial of Joan of Arc. And most of his central characters seem imprisoned, if only in the soul, either through their misfortunes or because society has made it inevitable. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a gloomy outlook that he puts into his films, which give him that sort of noir quality. Mm-hmm. And since he is a painter, I mean, he does know how to paint with you know, gradations of light.
And so, and one of the, so of these other films, I guess, what other films in his filmography would you say really stand out? Because I haven't seen it, but I know one film a lot of people talk about with him. I think you may have mentioned it was called A Man Escaped, which was about a person who was imprisoned as a member of the French Resistance.
Yeah. This particular movie, Pickpocket, is probably the most influential of Bresson's trio of masterpieces from the 50s, the other two being A Man Escaped and Diary of a Country Priest. So for any Bresson fans out there, those would be the three to start with.
Okay. And so you're talking about like his minimalist filmmaking. I know one other, an American director that was real adored by the French, especially in the New Wave, for his minimalist style was Samuel Fuller. And so do you feel that those two have a similarity? That they, because I know he both had this, you know, we're not going to go too much with, we're just going to tell a story and tell it how it is and not go, you know, make it a tight, compact film.
Right. Yeah. His style is more matter of fact, though, and more of a newsreel, I think. Bresson's philosophy of film, he thought of the filmmaker as a weaver. So one of the things he was concerned with is that what no human eye is capable of catching, no pencil, brush, pen of pinning down, your camera catches without knowing what it is and pins it down with the machine's scrupulous indifference. So when you're looking just at anything, you can sort of focus in on a particular object. And to you, that object, while you're looking at it, is prominent. But if you take your camera out and take a picture, all things are equal. So you've kind of got ideas in your head that you're trying to bring out with a camera, but the camera is just completely non-involved. It's just a machine.
Hmm. Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of the one scene when they're going into the station for the first time with this group of pickpocketers. When you open it up, there's the guy with the cart and there's the couple, and you're just watching the film wondering, like, well, who's the target going to be? And it goes on all these people, and then you're just wondering, well, who exactly are they going for?
Right, and it's almost very sensual, the way he zeroes in on people. And he's almost always, like, approaching them and making contact in a way, eye contact or in some way acknowledging them, which I don't think a real pickpocket would do. I would think you would want to be blend into the crowd, have nobody see you.
Yeah, exactly. And he definitely gets a lot close to him because I think when he gets caught early in the film with the guy on the train, he does make eye contact with him, or at least get very close to him, where the guy, when he realizes that, oh, my wallet's missing, then he's going to realize, oh, that must have been that guy who was really close to me.
Right, who was looking at me like all shifty.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, we talked already a lot about his use of non-professional actors and his use of minimalism. And so we talk about it, especially in this film, but what other films in his would you say also do that? Like, what other non-professional actors were in his movies?
Oh, I don't have a good answer for that. I'm not up on that answer.
Okay. Then there's other films. Talk about his minimalism. What other films you see that he really just keeps it bare and keeps it minimum?
I think the two that I mentioned that I consider part of that trilogy, which would be A Man Escaped and Diary of a Country Priest.
Okay. So we're getting close to the end of my questions here. Is there anything I haven't covered or brought up that you want to bring up now?
Well, I want to ask you how you felt this compared the pickpocketing scenes to the How to Commit a Crime scenes in Le Samurai of Melville's. Because Melville's, Le Samurai was meant to, they say, that was meant to be, you know, his answer to this movie.
Hmm. Well, you know, because that did go in my mind, like, wow, this is a lot like Melville. But I thought they're both really good, and they do stand on their own. They're very similar, but it was interesting that I was curious, like, what did Melville hate so much about this movie that he felt so bad that he had to, like, get a reply to?
You know, I don't know if he just felt like he didn't think, maybe he thought I could do it better. And then, or maybe he resented maybe Bresson did it first when he wanted to do it.
Hmm.
I mean, they're both working in the same sort of genre of French gangster movies. I'm not sure what the source of their animosity really was, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, why? Yeah, because they're both very similar. Like, why, you know, what's so different that you hate them so much? Okay, so getting close to the end of my questions here. I know we've brought it up already twice, but once again, just tell us a little bit about your French film course and how you're going to incorporate this movie or just Robert Bresson into it.
I'm definitely going to show this movie in class because it has so many interesting things about it. If only the scene where you watch, you know, how to pick pockets. It's just shot so well. So we are definitely going to have some French gangster movies in the class. The class will be Tuesdays from 9 to noon in the fall of 2016. And we will be not just doing French gangsters, but we'll be doing Jacques Tati and old stuff, new directors you've never heard of, short films that I found at film festivals, everything I can possibly pack into 14 weeks.
What, one French film I know I just saw recently, it was more of a commercial hit than, like I say, artistic, but it was The Intouchables.
Love that movie. I open up world cinema with that movie. Movie sets the stage really well for French film. Because it's lighthearted, it's a true story, it has wonderful actors, mm-hmm. and it always takes people by surprise if they haven't seen it before. That's just a wonderful movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I really enjoy that. So you're definitely going to show that?
Yeah. Well, I can actually stream that one. So I don't know if I'm going to show that one in the French movie class. I'll definitely talk about it. And Omar Sy, because he's such an up-and-coming actor.
Yeah, I know. Just last year, I know I saw him in Jurassic World.
Yeah, he was. He also plays the bishop in one of those superhero movies. I can't remember whether it's Captain America or one of those.
Now I'm going to have to look it up.
Yes, and he looks really cool as the bishop, too.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been looking at acclaimed French director Robert Bresson and his essential classic, Pickpocket. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m. and Sunday at 2:30 p.m. or anytime at armchairdirectors.podomatic.com. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, OGN, to reach you at last, what a path I had to take.